It's 1 p.m. So, Jim, if you want to go ahead and start recording, and Chris, the...
This conference is no longer being recorded.
And then, Chris, if you want to do the other recorder. So I want to welcome everybody to the June 21st, 2021 Florida Building Commission Hurricane Research Advisory Committee meeting. Want to just remind everybody about working in the virtual world. Please try to keep yourselves muted, but not on hold to keep background noise. Please identify yourself each time you speak by name and when motions are made. Please wait till you're called upon to speak, and everybody will have a chance who wishes to speak on issue. All right, well, next order is to determine that we have a quorum. And Chairman Schock?
Here.
Sergio Escunce? Okay. Joe Belcher?
Here.
Okay. We're, stay here again if you would, Joe.
Here.
Okay, there you are. Commissioner Compton?
Here.
I believe Eric Stafford's here for Ann Cope. Is that correct, Eric?
Yeah, that's right, Jeff. I'm here.
All right, so Eric's Ann's alternate. Mark Michelson?
Here.
Craig Perino?
Here.
John Plissage?
Here.
I believe Angela Shadle said she wouldn't be here today, but I'll check anyway. Angela? Okay. Jeffrey Schnellman?
Here.
Vince Seha?
Present.
And Commissioner Swope?
Here.
All right, so that's 11 of 13. Let me just double check. I'm sorry, that's Commissioner Schiffer. I missed you, Brad.
Yeah, I'm on.
Right. Okay, so like I said, that's 11 of 13. Is Sergio on or not? And Angela already let us know she wouldn't be on, so that accounts for everybody but Sergio. So we have 11 of 13, we have a quorum. And then we have our DBPR staff on as well. Jim Hammers, Chris Howell, Justin Vogel, Mo Madani, and I'm not sure Tom Campbell's on or not. We also have a caller by phone, caller number 3. Is that you, Mo? Caller number 3 is not responding. If maybe toggle them a bit, Jim, and see if they can. There you go. Caller number 3, you've just been muted and unmuted. Could you respond, please?
I'm wondering if that might be me. Is that me, number 3?
No, you show up okay. Your name's on. So.
Okay.
I think it might be Mo, but I'm not sure because I don't see Mo. Oh, there's Mo up here as well. Sometimes Mo has two different ones. Mo, are you, did you call in on a phone as well? And you're muted, too.
All right, can you hear me, Jeff?
Yes.
All right, that's me, Brownie.
Okay, all right, good. Okay, well, let's go ahead and start. Today's business is really to approve the minutes from the May 18th meeting and then to receive and accept the final reports on the wind-induced loads on roof overhangs and updating the state extreme rainfall projection reports that we saw previously as interim reports. And is there a motion to approve the agenda as it was submitted and posted?
Michelson moved to approve.
Schiffer was second.
All right, Michelson and Schiffer. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. You received the minutes of the May 18th meeting. They've been posted to the agenda. Does anybody have any revisions or additions to that? If not, is there a motion to accept the minutes as they were posted?
Michelson moved to approve.
Schnellman second.
All right, Michelson and Schnellman. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right. Well, we've taken care of logistical issues. We're going to start off first with the wind-induced loads on roof overhangs. I think Ionis is, I'm not sure if he's here or not.
Yes,
here. Yes, you're here to go ahead and give us a brief overview. You've seen the report and then answer questions, and then we'll ask for a motion to accept the report. Mo, would you like to say anything first?
I think you did mention, this is Mo Madani, you did mention, you know, the fact that this is a final report, and March 22nd, you heard the presentation on the interim report. And just to refresh your memory, the objective of this research project is to mainly conduct a large-scale wind tunnel testing at a wall of wind facility of FIU, necessary to clarify how the pressure on the wall relate to the overhang and for what distance, and at what point does the wall pressure cease to affect the overhang and the more direct wind load on the overhang control as though for an open building. And as Jeff said, I think, Ionis is available to give us the interim report, the final report summary. Thank you.
Great. All right. Go ahead, Ionis.
Yeah, we put together a presentation. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to share our screen, my screen.
Jim will let you do it.
Okay. Let me see. All right. Can you see the presentation?
Yeah, we can see it now. Uh-huh.
All right. Let me put it in full screen now. All right. Perfect. All right. So I think like Mo introduced the topic already. This is a final report. We have about like 30 or 35 slides. I'm going to start the presentation with introduction and a brief background, and then I'm going to pass it to my student, Karim, who also talked in one of the other meetings that I was not available. He's going to discuss in detail the results, the findings. There's a bit of, like, technical details, and, you know, we're going to show you some of the pressure data that we obtained in the wind tunnel, at the wall of wind. And I'm gonna finish the presentation with a brief, like, overview of the findings and some recommendations and future work for the next year. Let me acknowledge also my former advisor and co-PI in this project, Ted Stathopoulos from Concordia University, Canada. He has big experience with like AC7 wind load codification studies, so he was a great help. And Karim did almost all of the experimental work and the analysis. We put together the report and the presentation here. So big thank you to my student for doing a very good job. All right, let me start with a brief introduction. It's about overhangs. One of the very first things we try to do is to get more information from experts, and as experts, we consider the building code officials. So we reached out to Miami-Dade, Broward, and Coral Gables, and we set up an informal advisory group. You might see the same terminology in the report that I submitted at IAB, advisory board. And we also got some contact information from major manufacturers. So they provided also like the sketches that you see here. The drawings are from Deco Truss Company. We talked to them as well. And we had limited amount of time at the lab. So we wanted to optimize, obviously, and do what is, you know, consider the cases that are most common. I don't want to go through the, you know, a lot of details here. What is overhang? You know, you know more or less what we're dealing with. We have different construction methods, so we try to optimize, and we use the first case with the soffit. The one of the reasons that we did this research is because obviously there are regional differences in the way we do this kind of, building component, if you may want to call it. building components. So there are different ways of doing it. And in Florida, we tend to use like longer overhangs for weather protection. And this was basically the objective behind the study, to consider an extended version of an overhang and see how much different difference it makes in the wind induced pressures. We also looked in some recent data from damages that occurred in from extreme events, you know, back in the last 5 years. This is a photo we gathered from Dorian, falling Dorian, and you can see clearly here on the right the damage both on the extended, you know, overhang in the first, on the first house, and in the background you'll see something like a canopy. We have done a lot of work on canopies with Dr. Stathopoulos. So this is an extension of the roof, and the damage is significant there as well. The study was about codification, so we had to look both in ASC 710 and 716 that came into effect as of January 1st or December 31st, if I'm not mistaken, in Florida. So there is a major difference between the two versions there. And basically what is happening with the new version is we assume that the wind induced load on the soffit, the overhang, the bottom surface of the overhang, is equal to the wall pressure. And this is what we were after. We wanted to see if that's a reasonable assumption to make when we started using like extended overhangs, if we increase the length, basically. We started doing some literature survey. There are different studies out there, not really many related to what we were trying to do. I'm going to spare you from the details, all the different studies. Everything is included in the report, but basically we summarize or we group the different studies in the in terms of like the effect of the roof geometry, the effect of the overhang length, which was the most important, I guess, for us. Interference effects when we have other buildings in the proximity, not really relevant, but we want to look on that as well. There were like a couple of studies related to that. And finally, severe wind events and performance of roof overhangs. So we looked in some reports and tried to identify some other like papers that discuss, you know, the damages observed on roof overhangs. Moving into the specifics of the project, we identified the first one was the overhang under surface versus the wall pressure correlation, which I mentioned in my introduction. This is an indication how well correlated the soffit load to the wall. That will basically validate the assumption of using the same loads or not. The second objective was the effect of the overhang length on wind induced load. So if we start increasing the length, go beyond the 2 feet that we usually see, what is going to happen? Are we still okay with this assumption of using the wall loads on the overhang at the bottom of the overhang? And finally, utilize a larger model to allow for a more detailed pressure monitoring. And I guess having available the wall of wind, we can go and use a larger model than the typical ABL wind tunnel study, which is 1 to 100 or even like 1 to 200 scale. We were able to test a larger model, include more details when it comes to the geometry, and also consider a lot more pressure taps on the model. I mentioned already the advisory group. So we had Miami-Dade, Broward County, City of Coral Gables, and Tech of Trust Company and MyTech Company. So I want to acknowledge also their help in this project. We had a couple of meetings, and they helped us identify, you know, the principal configuration that we wanted to test. Following this discussion, we summarized, you know, the findings or the recommendations, the suggestions, and we came up with two configurations. We agreed that the most common case is the heap roof. So we consider the heap roof, and we had the first model, configuration A, we call it, that had a 2 feet overhang. And configuration B was with a 6 feet overhang. The roof slope was 4 to 12, one of the most common roof slopes out there, and full scale dimensions of 50 by 40 feet by 20 feet height, eave height. You can see here the plexiglass model that we built and we tested at the Wall of Wind, the first model on the left, the 6 feet overhang model on the right. Same slope, same roof shape, building dimensions. The only difference is the incline, the overhang 2 versus 6 feet. The scale we used was 1 to 10. Again, this is a very large scale for wind tunnel standards, so that allows us to consider details related to the thickness even of the overhang. When you go to a very small scale, then you violate the thickness. We have space to include a lot more pressure taps. You can see here the tubing inside the model. All these tubes end up on the surface of the model, tiny holes, we call them pressure taps. And basically we can get a very precise picture of the wind-induced pressures when we start the experiment. All right, we tested a lot of different directions from 0 to 360 to have a complete picture of what is happening from different wind angles of attack. 40 wind directions in total, and the target wind speed was 40 miles per hour. Again, this is like 1 to 10 scale. The sampling time was about 60 seconds and very high sampling frequency, 520 hertz for the instrument, the pressure scanner. So we get a very precise time history at each pressure tap. We had also time to test two different type of terrain exposure. We did open terrain and suburban terrain. And here's the location of the pressure taps. As you can see, the focus was mostly on the roof overhang. That's why I have a lot more pressure taps at the end of the roof, the top. This is the bottom, the soffit. And then a lot of like pressure taps on the wall as well to be able to correlate what we get on the overhang and on the wall. And I'm going to pass it to Karim. I'm not sure, Karim, can you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Dizis.
All right, good. So I'm going to pass it to Karim. Just let me know when you want me to switch slides.
Okay. All right. So good afternoon, everyone. So right now I'm going to discuss the results and discussion for this project. So right after finishing the experimental program, we started with data analysis. So we had the raw data and then we went through a transfer function. This transfer function to remove any distortion from the tubing length due to like the tubing length that was connected from the pressure taps to the ZUC. And then we also applied the partial turbine simulation, which is kind of analysis that we have to do for all the larger scale or for full scale test at the Wall of Wind. After that, we started with like calculating the pressure coefficients, the mean pressure coefficients, the peak minimum, peak maximum, and we drew the contour plots. After that, we applied like the correlation coefficients between the soffit and the walls. And then we did some regression analysis and area averaging for codification purpose. Yeah, the positions. So here we have the pressure coefficients. Like, as we know, like the familiar equation for calculating the pressure coefficient, which is the delta P over half rho V squared, which is a V reference as the roof mean height. So we can get the CP minimum, the CP peak, and the CP 3 seconds. In order to be able to compare it with the AST 716 pressure coefficients. So the pressure coefficients were calculated for 40 wind directions as they were tested, as Dr. Dizis have showed in the previous slides. And then we did the peak minimum over the overhangs and for two terrains, the open terrain and the sub-urban terrain for each individual model, for the configuration A and configuration B model. Yes. So it was apparent from the test results that the terrain did include a considerable effect on the roof peak section. I don't know why. Yeah. So it was apparent that the terrain change didn't cause a considerable effect on roof peak overhangs, like for the suction. However, it caused some considerable effect on the wall and the soffit. And the 2 feet overhang experienced higher peak minimum CP than the 6 feet overhangs for both terrains. And this actually is compatible with the literature survey that we did before for some like studies. And also for the wall, since the wall is symmetric, but there are some like few difference between the CP, which is like range from 5 to 10% between the edges of the wall. However, in the center of the wall, it is very symmetric. So yeah, next slide for this, please. And here we have some contour plots. Here we have between the two roof. I'm not sure if like the bigger title is like a, you know, you can see it or not, but this we have like the roof overhang. A is the open terrain and B is the suburban terrain. So we have like a very slight difference between the CP, like peak minimum suction for post terrains. Next slide we have for the soffit and for the wall, the same. We have also for A and B, like A is for open terrain and B is suburban terrain. We have like similar contour plots, but with different values. So suburban terrain shows like slightly values for overhangs, but like higher values for wall and soffit. As we can see here, like it's more than 1.2 and above, but for the open terrain, it's around 1 and above. So there are like kind of difference between the walls and slight difference between the overhangs. Next slide, Dr. Aziz, please. And the other thing is also for model B, which is a 6 feet overhang. As I, like I stated in the beginning, like the 6 feet overhang experienced lower peak minimum CP, I mean peak suction CP, compared to the 2 feet overhang. So here also we have the open terrain and the suburban terrain. And they are like kind of very similar between each other, between the two roofs. Next, please, Dr. Aziz. And then we have the soffit and wall. Also, like the roof overhangs were kind of similar, but the soffit and the roof and the walls are higher for the positive pressure for the suburban terrain. And then after these contour plots, we have the correlation of soffit and adjacent wall. So what we have here is we choose the three middle taps for the upper taps at the wall and the three middle taps at each row of the soffit to see how the correlation between the pressure fluctuations between the wall taps and the soffit taps. So as we can see here for the 360 wind directions, the upper, which is the blue lines are the peak maximum and the red lines are the peak minimum. So we can see here for the peak maximum along the all the directions, like the 40 wind directions, they are very similar, like, and exactly like between 125 and 225, they are almost conceived above each other. But for the negative or the peak minimum, there are slightly different. And as we go far away from the wall, the taps started to be kind of less correlated with the soffit taps. So these are the three taps for model A. Next slide, Dr. Jesus, please. The same thing we have for model B, which is a 6 feet overhang, which is we were able to put like put more taps, and we have the like the privilege to put more taps. So we have here five rows. We did the same thing. Like we took the three middle row taps in the upper wall, and we compared with the three middle taps at each row for the soffit. So also here we can see like as we go far away from the wall, the peak minimum or the suction started to be less correlated with the wall, but the peak positive or like the positive pressure are very similar between the wall taps and the soffit taps, even when we go far away from the wall. Next slide, please. So we have here, like as I showed for model A and B, the peak minimum, peak maximum pressure coefficient for the three taps. And as I stated, like from 135 to 225, the taps, the soffit taps are mainly exposed to positive pressure. So this is like the dominant one or the dominant the directions for the positive. And we can see the peak minimum ranges from 0 to negative 0.5, which are very low because the positive pressure are the dominant one. And as we see, like when we saw the positive pressures are very similar to each other, this supports the assumption in AAC 716 that the positive pressure coefficient at the bottom covering, or I mean the bottom covering of the soffit, shall be taken as external pressure coefficient on the adjacent wall surface. Next, yeah. After that, we did some regression analysis to get the relation between the pressure coefficient of the soffit tab and the wall taps also. But for all directions, for all over, for all the taps, not just the three middle taps, but for all the taps, and to see how the soffit pressure coefficients change either by decreasing or increasing compared to the wall depth. So we did this regression analysis for the two model for wind direction 180 and 90. 180 is normal to south wall and 90 is normal to east wall using Pearson's correlation, which is the R factor. We did this regression analysis. So as we can see in the next slide, we have here's the graph. So this graph, as we said, we can see we have upper, like in each graph, the right part and lower part. The upper, the right part is a positive pressure, and the lower part is a soffit raw negative pressure. So as we can see, the positive pressure are like the regression analysis are all around the line, which means that they are very similar between the wall and the soffit, while for the negative pressure, even for the first flow, as we can see here, it started to be like kind of far from the bedding line, especially for some directions where we like the suction are like kind of different between the wall and the soffit. Here we have in the right graph, we have for the second row, for the third row, which is the least row. So these four, we have model A, we have the first row and third row. The second row is something in between, but just I would like to show the first row, which is the one nearest to the wall, and the third row, which is the one farthest from the wall. So as you can see also, the positive pressure are very similar between the wall and soffit, but the negative pressure also are kind of different between the soffit and the wall. The same thing we did for model B, where we have the soffit and the overhang are 6 feet. So we can see next slide. Oh, we also have here the first row and the fifth row, which is, as you can remember, we have for the 2 feet, we had three rows for the overhangs for the taps, but for the 6 feet, we had 5 rows. So as we can see also, the first row and the fifth row, for the first row, both the positive and negative pressure are very similar and were correlated between the wall taps and the soffit taps. But as we go far away from the wall, the peak positive is still okay and similar, but the peak negative or suction started to be more like converged, and until we see here like at the fifth row, it was like the R square factor is very low and it's kind of far away from the fitting line. So this was the regression analysis for model A and B. After that, we did the correlation coefficients. So this correlation coefficient contour plots, we are correlating the soffit pressure taps with the wall pressure taps. So as we can see, like 5 directions were used for correlation coefficient for the south soffit with the south wall. For the 2 feet overhang, most of the directions were well correlated, regardless which direction, but most of them were well correlated. Like the upper part of any graph is the part nearest to the wall, and the lower part of any of the graph is the part way away from the wall. So as you can see here, when we are like in the upper graph, it's around 0.98 or 0.97, which is very well correlated between the soffit and the wall. And as we go far away, this correlation contour plot started to decrease until sometimes it reached to 0.8 or 0.75 for model A. And when we can see like right now in the next slide for model B, it's less correlated. So as we go far away from, here we can see next slide. As we go far away from the wall, the correlation plots like are more, it's more apparent that it's less correlated until it reaches sometimes to 0.5 and 0.4. So it depends on the directions. The directions like 180 where the wall and soffit are exposed mainly to, to positive pressure, where the positive pressure was the dominant one. Correlation coefficients are ranging between 0.98 and 0.85, which is still well correlated. But for other directions where suction or negative pressure is the dominant one, we have like less correlated correlation coefficients down to 0.4. So this indicates that the correlation coefficient for longer overhang significantly decrease compared to shorter overhang, especially when the taps are exposed to suction. Next slide, please. Yes. The last thing we have is the area averaged. pressure coefficients, so we need to do some codification purpose compared to AC716. So this for this phase or this testing experimental work, we did a head roof or slope 18 degree. So according to that, we have to compare to the graphs on the AC716 for head roof with overhangs for slope between 10 and 24 or 25 degrees. So we have here for the 18 degrees, and then we did the area averaging according to this areas. As you can see, we take like some starting from two taps together up to the whole overhang together and see how change, like how combining the area of each tap together over the area, we did change, and we did, and then we compared that to area averaging plots for the GCP and AC716. So as you can see here, we have here two plots, one for the south side and one for the east side, because we have the pressure taps on both sides of the walls and soffit and overhangs. So we have here the building dimension was 50 feet by 40 feet. So according to that, H over V are not equal for both sides. So H over V for south side, which is the longer side, is 0.57, while for the lower, for the shorter side, is 0.71. The AC716 has the plots for below 0.5 and above 0.8 for the H over B. So according to that, we have to interpolate these graphs for 0.57 and for 0.71. And we have here for the left graph, we have zone 2E and zone 3. We have four cases. First one is case 1 and case 2. And for zone 2E, and then case 1 for zone 3 and case 2 for zone 3. We found that zone 3 were kind of below the limits or like around the limit, which is good compared to the AC716, while for 2E is slightly higher and up to like kind of higher with higher, especially with the lower area. And as we go far away, like or increasing the area, it starts to go down, to decrease, but it's still slightly higher than the limit of zone 2E. On the right graph, we have here for the east wall, which is H over B different. Almost most of the points or the area averaging coefficients were below the limits for zone 2E and zone 3, which is compared to that, it's lower than the AC716. So we only have here for zone 2E, the south side for model A, which is above the limits for AC716.
All right, thank you, Karim. A lot of data and contour plots. I know it's not easy, to follow everything on this slide. So we try to summarize, the important points. When it comes to overhang length, we see that there are higher pressure coefficients at the edges, or what we've noticed for the 2 feet overhang compared to the 6 feet overhang, and that also can be seen in the comparisons with GPS-7. The absolute positive pressures on walls and soffits are more correlated in the 2 feet compared to the 6 feet overhang, and the negative pressure are less correlated. So we have to look more carefully on the negative pressure coefficients for the overhangs. And the soffit edge versus the upper wall pressure is less correlated on the 6 feet overhang, particularly for the negative pressures. When it comes to the terrain, comparing between open and suburban, we didn't see any considerable effect on the roof and the overhangs, the top base level of the roof surface. And we've noticed some more considerable effects on the walls and the soffit when we changed the terrain. But overall, there was like more or less good comparison between the two terrains. And finally, the core implications for the positive pressures, we don't have any strong evidence to propose any changes at the moment with the cases we tested. For the negative pressures, we have some interesting findings, as you saw in the last few slides, that indicate the lack of correlation between the upper walls and soffit areas. Obviously, when it comes to codification study, the most important aspect is to consider a large enough number of cases before we jump into conclusions and, change codes or propose, changes in the code. And this is what is coming up. Basically, we're going to increase our confidence by considering more cases, including cable roof, including different overhang lengths or slopes. And last but not least, the GCP plots in AESC 716 for heat proof of slope 7 to 20. That was basically our case. Might be less conservative for zone 2E, as Karim explained. So everything else looks more or less good. But we've noticed that we got like higher values, absolute values for zone 2E in particular. Future work, we want to consider the gable roof. We want to change the slope if we have, you know, the budget to do that. Overhang, we may consider lengths between 2 to 6 or 6+ feet. Different geometries, constructions method, and basically the case where we have no soffit. This was the other case that geometry that we discussed with the industry representatives. They mentioned that, you know, this is the other way of doing the overhang. So here we have to consider the net pressure on this extension. More relevant to the canopy study that we did, you know, a few years back. And we might also consider again the open versus suburban terrain to see if we get anything new when we change the terrain. And that is the end of my presentation. If I don't know if Dr. Stathopoulos is on the call. I don't know if he wants to add something.
Yes, I am in the call. Thank you very much. I think that was a very clear presentation, and I would be very pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Stathopoulos. Thank you all for the presentation. Does any committee members have any questions or comments I'd like to make?
Hey, Jeff. It's Eric. Eric Stafford. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, thanks for the summary and clarifying a few things. Just a couple of one comment and then a question particularly about the negative coefficient. But just want to point out in the summary and your report in the paragraph of the summary, you mentioned that in addition, the results confirmed that both configuration soffit pressure coefficient may be taken as the adjacent external wall pressure as stated by ASC 716. I think what you mean there is the positive pressure, because you mentioned several times and even in a bullet item that the negative coefficients are not well correlated. Or in one spot, you pardon the report, you state that they're not valid. So that's one comment. The question is, so which direction do you think these negative pressures are going? It was hard to tell. I didn't read every part of the report and then your summary today. But are you seeing that they're too low, they're too high, or can you comment on that?
So there are two things that we try to identify here. If the assumption to use the wall pressure coefficients is valid, that was one thing. And then what happens when we start like having a longer overhang? And I think when it comes to the first assumption to use the wall pressure coefficients, we've noticed some differences when we have like a longer overhang. So there we might, you know, we might be able to make some changes, but again, this is just like basically two cases that we have. And you're right about the positive versus negative. So depending on which line ASC 7, you know, design guideline we check, the positive or the negative, we have a different conclusion. So you're right about positive versus negative. There is something there that we've seen, and we need to examine further. And second, the correlation was less. So basically, we might say that what you see in the soffit is not really correlated to the wall when we have the extended overhang. So if we want to go towards the direction of, okay, if the overhang is beyond a certain length, then we can follow, you know, a different design approach. That could be one path to take. But, you know, I'm always very, very careful when it comes to, you know, codification process. So we definitely need more data, you know, to draw safe conclusions.
Wait, that answer? Yeah. Can I follow up a little bit, Jeff?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah. So, but I guess, you know, because it doesn't seem to, in the report, make the distinction between the 2 feet overhang and the 6 feet overhang with regard to correlation between the wall pressure and the negative pressure. It seems to kind of indicate that it applies, you know, across the board. And I mean, you know, and it'd like that, we would like to see that as part of the future work, because I think that's important. Because I mean, I know you mentioned in here that this is a change to ASC 716, but actually the same language was in 710. It's actually been in the Florida Building Code as far as using the wall pressure on the soffits going all the way back to 2007. So this is the way it's been done in Florida for quite some time now, using the positive and negative pressures on the wall. So I just, you know, was curious if you had an idea and you know. Yeah. Are they
regarding the correlation? I mean, what we've included in the report is just like, you know, going to this slide here where we see like this is a 6 feet overhang, and it's clearly, you know, that one, when you see one, is perfect correlation. So basically the two signals, they behave the same. Whenever we have a peak on the wall, we have a peak on the surface, or if we have a low value, you know, it's low on the they show the same behavior basically, the fluctuations in the pressure. So here in the 6 feet overhang, we clearly see like lack of correlation for the 6 feet compared to the 2 feet. We were like very close to one in all area of the 2 feet overhang. So I think we've included some sort of language about that in the report. I'm going to ask Dr. Stathopoulos help here regarding the previous versions and of the ESE. He has a lot of experience when it comes, you know, to previous versions of ASC 7, on the changes that occur between the different versions when it comes to, like, you know, wall versus soffit load. So, Dr. Stathopoulos, can you help us here?
Yeah, I'll be pleased to clarify a couple of things here, hopefully to shed a little bit more light to this issue. That's a very important issue. Well, one of the big differences between ASC 7, 10 and 16 is that in ASC 710, the values for the overhangs have come from wind tunnel studies when simultaneous pressure measurements took place on the upper and lower part of the overhang. In ASC 716, however, because of other changes that they happened there, the consideration was not to do that, but to consider the wall pressures as being equal to the pressures on the lower surface of the overhang. So this particular study now, because first it looks into this assumption made to what extent it is or it's not valid, and of course there are only two cases here and we see some differences, but that needs some continuation. So that's one issue. And of course the second issue is that it is the first time that we do some measurements on the wall of wind of this nature so that we can really check the effect of scaling. So whether you have 6 feet or 2 feet and so on makes much more sense here in comparison to the large scales, that the small scales that we have in the wind tunnel models. And I think that also kind of, you know, throws additional evidence as to what is happening, in other words, we are close to reality or further from reality and so on. So these are the points that I would like to make, but definitely I think we need some more cases to study here in order to have some conclusions to go with if we're going to suggest some changes to the code.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and just one more thing, Jack. I mean, I could agree, you know, completely, you know, Ted and us, but I guess that, you know, that really was curious because this has been the way we've done it in Florida for a while. And, you know, soffits continue to be, soffits, I know you're looking at overhangs, but soffits continue to be a problem in hurricanes. And when they fail, you know, we're getting a lot of wind-driven rain in the building. And so I'm just curious to know, you know, and would like to see in the second phase of this, of the future work, you know, which direction this is, that maybe that's one of the priorities, is figure out, are we using the right coefficients on the saw?
I couldn't agree more with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Are there any other committee members have any questions or comments? All right, does any public member have a comment or question?
This is Arlene Stewart. I have one.
Go ahead, Arlene.
Yeah. you know, this is kind of new for me, but one of the things that I often talk about when it comes to energy is putting wings on buildings, because one of the frequent trade-offs is overhangs versus window performance. So this is very interesting. Plus what's happening with the new levels of ceiling insulation. Has there been any research about how these coefficients and negative pressures have on raised heel trusses and how that shifts?
Can you repeat what kind of trusses you said?
Raised heel trusses.
Definitely.
Especially when we're taking a look at what's happening with climate change and the climate accords and things like that. And because, you know, we're looking at a significant shift in the depth of insulation, not only in Florida, but across the country. And I can't believe that these negative pressures won't have, or the research being done here won't have an impact in all kinds of insurance applications, because it's not just storms don't just happen in Florida, but we also have to deal with tornadoes and such.
Yeah, I mean, it was not obviously in the scope of this study, but I know in the world of wind we have, you know, done in the past few years research related to elevated homes. We've done research related to the effect of height, basically, on the pressure coefficients. The ASC 7 approach is we have the definition of the low-rise building, 60 feet. So that's a whole different topic, right?
Let me explain.
Let's kind of keep it as brief as possible, I think.
No, I understand, but he's thinking that it's the whole building. What happens when you actually have to... You can't put the roof right on top of where the wall is, and you have to lift it higher. How does that shift where the soffit is? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, it's the gap between the top of the wall and the roof.
I think that's a very good question, what you're asking, but unfortunately, we don't know the answer at this moment. But it's very good. I understand very well your question, yes.
Okay. Any other members of the public wish to comment? Okay, let's go back to our committee then. We're looking for a motion to accept the report, please.
Vince Ahaus, motion to accept the report.
Second, Stafford.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you very much for the presentation. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on to our next, which is updating the state extreme rainfall projections with Jayantha. Mo, do you want to have a little intro on this one?
Yeah. This is Mo Madani. Good afternoon. This research project, as you know, you received the interim report in March on this research project. And, you know, the main objective of this one is to mainly extend the rainfall projection of the phase one project, which was focused on Miami-Dade, which was a bio study titled Potential Implication of Sea Level Rise and Changing rainfall in Florida. This really project will extend the study to all community across the state of Florida, and with us all be on the line to give us a summary of the final report. Thank you.
All right. Can you let me share my screen? Can you all hear me?
Yes,
I'm getting a feedback.
So you have yourself muted for some reason, but we can still hear you. I'm not sure why. Do you have both your computer audio and a phone?
No. I'm not sure what's going on. Let me see.
Well, we're able to hear you okay, so.
He's dialed in as well as going, so he's running both.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So if you have both a phone and a computer, a lot of times it creates an audio interference. So
right. Maybe I have two instances of this right. going.
So just turn one of them off. Yeah, I can see you. You're on in two different things. So if you now you're muted, that's your computer. That's your phone.
Yeah. Okay, I'm getting still the feedback. But you're not getting the feedback.
No, but here's the deal. If you turn the volume off on your computer, since you're using the phone, that should stop the problem.
Okay, I'm not sure. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Okay. I think I'm still having a problem. In the interest of time, can I go ahead and present?
Yeah, we're not really getting the feedback, so we're okay.
Okay. Let me share my screen. Can you see the screen?
Not yet.
Okay. I thought I'm sharing it. Let me see. How about now?
No, not yet.
Sorry about all this. Anything now?
Nope. Sorry, no. not yet.
Jeez.
Jim, do you have any suggestions in terms of? I presume
Let me re-log in.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's in. It's just a matter of picking the right screen. Let me take it back and give it back to him so he can pull the.
Right. So when you hit screen share, you have to make sure the document's on your laptop or your computer screen, and then click on it so that it gets the right one up.
Okay. If it helps, you have two options. One is screen, but you also have another tab that says applications. You have to pick applications to select the PowerPoint.
And you're also muted at this point. You cut off the phone, I guess. There you go.
Okay. I cannot share the screen. I don't know why, but I can see you all. I think. Let me try again. Okay. How about now? Can you see the screen?
There you go.
Yep.
Okay. Now you're not seeing the right screen. Okay.
Presentation. Note view. You just need to get in the presentation view.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. How about now?
There you go.
Okay. That's good. All right. I'm so sorry about the technical difficulties here.
It's all right.
Again, my name is Obey, and the Director and Research Professor for Sea Level Solutions Center in the Institute of Environment at Florida International University. I appreciate the opportunity to do this research. I want to thank the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee of the Florida Building Commission, and especially thank Mr. Madani and also Vince Sayers for encouraging us to do this study. Like Mr. Madani said, this is an extension of some important work we had done. I want to recognize my project team, beside myself, Professor Mike Sukup, Tiffany Proxler, and Dr. Anupama John. She's a postdoctoral associate recruited for this project. And you see the report that we have submitted that you already have. So why is this important? Extreme rainfall data in the current building code is quite dated, dating back to 1970s, and with all this discussion on the changing environment due to climate change and others, there's a real urgent need to update the data in the code itself. But not only updating it to the current from 1970, but also are the future rainfall extremes, are they going to change, and how do we adjust for that? These are important at the state level. There are a couple of state bills that I have referenced here. One is the Senate Bill 178 that was related to sea level rise and other aspects of climate change, but more importantly, the one that you know got approved recently and I think signed by the governor is the statewide flooding and sea level rise resilience plan. And then this is where this type of data might be very helpful. As I mentioned, you see the little map that we produced last time for Miami-Dade. The idea is, can we extend this to the entire state? And that way all communities in the state could be using this updated rainfall extremes. I want to acknowledge the collaboration that I have with U.S. Geological Survey. There's a parallel project that the Water Management District has funded for South Florida, but we make sure that through our collaboration, we use the same methodology, techniques, and same data, and I appreciate their support in you know, sharing the computer codes and the joint work together. So just to give you some background on why this is important, we know that because of climate change and other aspects, future environmental stresses and shocks are going to change. You know, the literature suggests that there will be a change in, besides sea level rise, changes in rainfall patterns. We have been told that through research, we are going to see more extreme hurricanes. And if you see what happened in Houston and Texas and Carolinas, you know, there are some evidence that the rainfall associated with hurricanes are going to increase as well. And that's what the research project. So this, we believe that for resiliency in the state, for both rain loads and flood loads, this type of data is very useful. So what is in the current code? You see the figure on the left, very somewhat dated, you know, like three decades old, perhaps a couple of contour values showing the rain load, you know, that are typically used currently in the code. And the idea is, can we use the additional data that have been made available, but also project that into the future? One aspect that we considered and we adopted is the NOAA has updated the rainfall extremes, and this is being used quite a lot by many agencies already. So the idea now is, can we use this as the base, and then how do we estimate the changes to these data provided by NOAA, which have some updated rainfall values and extreme rainfall. And they have a website where you can go and estimate extreme rainfall for any of the sites they have in Florida, state of Florida. The FDOT also has what we call depth, duration, frequency curves for rainfall, you know, basically rainfall for a given depth and a duration and a particular frequency, 10-year, 25-year, 100-year. And for different zones, that I also have a similar project for sea level rise and climate change from FDOT. They are also changing over to NOAA Atlas 14, the figure that I showed you earlier. So this work that we are doing using the NOAA data as the basis will be very helpful for FDOT as well. We know that the research and the data have shown that, as you see on the figure on the lower right, the extreme heavy precipitation has extreme, particularly in the eastern and the southeast portion of the United States. So the question is, even if you use the NOAA Atlas 14 data, which is what I had shown you earlier, will they remain the same? How will they change in the future? So our strategy was basically to develop what we call a change factor. You know, what the change factor is, what factors should we use to adjust those depth, duration, frequency curves that are available currently, whether it's the FDOT curves or NOAA Atlas 14 curves. And that's the whole approach that we had used to provide the change factors for stakeholders and the users that they could use to multiply the depth, duration, frequency curves for future use in planning and design. So this is a very technically involved project in the sense that, you know, nobody can forecast what the future extreme rainfall is. You have to go use the climate models. And there are various levels of climate models available. And, you know, many climate models are available for at the global scale, what we call general circulation models, you see. And then there are several versions of these global models. You don't need to know all these acronyms, CMIP-5 and CMIP-6. These are very familiar to the climate modelers. These are the general circulation models, which basically simulates the entire globe. But the problem with this, as I will discuss in a minute, is that they're very coarse. And in Florida, they don't have the right type of resolution. And you can see here on the right-hand side, those kinds of very coarse global scale models are brought down to the local scale through a process known as downscaling. And there are two types of downscaling, dynamical and statistical. Dynamical is when we actually use a very complex climate model at the local scale to downscale the global scale results. Statistical is basically to provide a relationship from the global scale to the local scale. So fortunately, there are several data sets available, and you will hear me say these words very often, CODEX, LOCA, and MACA. Those are the climate data sets we have acquired for this project to look at how will the extreme change from the current to the future, and we looked at a couple of future scenarios. When you look at this, it's kind of a funny picture, but it is what it is. In other words, these are a lot of data sets, what we call big data. And we actually ended up using the FIU Supercomputing Center, or High Performance Computing Center, to analyze these large amounts of data. So these are our project tasks. We committed to have an external advisory panel. We basically, to develop future conditions, we acquired the current data sets and future data sets from climate models. We actually did some heavy duty statistical analysis. In doing that, we did what we call model culling, and I will explain that later on. And we did some statistical modeling to come up with extreme rainfall. But our ultimate goal was to find that change factor. What is the change from present to the future? Will it be increasing by 20%, 30%, or 40%? And that was our goal, and I will show you the results towards the end. And then finally provide some recommendations how to change the code itself. And part of the project was also to develop some maps and a website. And towards the end, I will explain where we have done this, and I provided an addendum that to provide the maps and the website details. So the external advisory panel, we assembled about 10 or 11 members across academia, several water management districts, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, chief state drainage engineer from FDOT, a county in the southeast, NOAA, and also some semi-private or private corporation, RAND Corporation, USGS, and others. So we had a very broad, highly educated advisory panel, and we presented our strategy. They provided two major recommendations. They said use the latest class of climate models, but they're not available yet. And I think in the future, any future work we do, we might update using those CMIP-6 class of models. And just they also recommended that FDOT is updating the DDF data or depth duration frequency data, and we should also use the Atlas 14 data set. So for the current data set, we acquired a lot of data, as I reported in the interim report. In this, the scope of work recommended that we look at 1 day, 3 day, 5 day, and 10 day duration. Return periods of frequencies of 10-year, 25-year, and 100-year. We also added 200-year. So for the historical data, for the reasons I mentioned earlier, we decided to use the NOAA Atlas 14, which is the latest and the greatest for the state that's available from NOAA that many agencies are beginning to use. but our results can also be used for other data sets from Water Management District or DOT. So this NOAA Atlas 14 data set, you know, they're available from this website. I can show you if you like. We basically have 242 stations, well distributed within the state of Florida. Data in 1840 to 2012 have been used to develop these rainfall frequency curves. And they use a methodology known as regional frequency curves. So the basic idea is, we have this data, and anyone can go to this website and specify the location and the duration and the frequency and can get all that data. And in this graphic, you see an example of that. This is the map of stations. They provide you with a graphic of what that depth duration frequency curve look like. The vertical axis, the depth of rainfall. Horizontal axis duration from 5 day to 10 day or even longer in their case. And then basically for different return period, these curves. So this is the set of curves, and they also provide a table of values to get the numbers. The question is, how will they change and what type of factor we should be applying to this? And that's kind of the final focus of our analysis. Now, we also acquired some gridded data set known as PRISM, a very high resolution 4 kilometer data set from, that's available widely across the United States called PRISM. You can see the resolution of that data. The primary use of this data was to determine this, which models are the best for our purpose. In other words, we have many models, as you will see in a minute. How do we do the model culling? So assuming this is our reference data sets, which of those climate model data are best for our use? That's kind of the primary use of this data. So for future climate data, we acquired 3 sets of data, as you will see, the Codex, LOCA, and MACA. These are different agencies, different actually around the world and around the United States, they have produced these future potential scenarios of climate, rainfall and other climate data. They are dynamically downscaled or statistically downscaled, and I know these are a little bit of a jargon here, but understand that there are different types of data that we looked at, all 3 of them, and they have different resolutions. And they also are available for different greenhouse gas pathways into the future. You know, in the future, will that be, are we following in a high emission pathway or low emission pathway? So this was the lot of data that we acquired and we analyzed. I will run through real quickly some matrices of different data sets that are available in your report as well. The LOCA data, many different scenarios of their models. Now, why do we have different an ensemble of models? They assume different initial conditions and different boundary conditions, because nobody can predict exactly, you know, what happened in the past, even in terms of greenhouse gases that are basis that are used in these models as boundary conditions or initial conditions. So they produce these 20 or 30 different potential realization of the climate models. But fortunately, these are available from 1950 onwards all the way up to 2099. So that could be used to determine the changes in extreme rainfall. So this is another data set that have become available. And then finally, another data set called Codex. I must say that these 3 data sets are being used by other regions in the country. I know Chesapeake Bay has developed a similar product that we are developing here for their region, and they have used the same data set. So our idea is that we have 242 stations, and in this gridded data, we will find the nearest grid cell for our Atlas 14 data sets where rainfall frequencies are available. And we did that for every data set, find the nearest station, and that's what we actually analyzed to compute that change factor. So the modeling methodology, and this is, there's some statistical concepts here, but I will explain. First, we do what is known as model culling. In other words, out of those models, which models work the best in Florida? Now, to do that, we compare those models for a reference data set, our prism gridded data, and we use what are known as climate indices, some metrics. So with respect to those metrics, what method should we basically choose out of that large ensemble set of models? And this is what is known as model culling. And this is a typical practice that people are considering these days, because you don't want to use all the models if they are not good for South Florida, for example, or Florida in general. Then we do some statistical modeling and briefly explain that. The details are in the report. And our ultimate goal is, what is our change factor going from the current period to two future periods? And I will mention in a minute, in a little later, what those periods are. So for model culling, what we did was, we realized that we cannot go very granular in this. We basically regionalized the entire state into five regions, you know, northwest, north, north central, south central, and south. So within these, each of the regions, we looked at the climate data, and we developed, this is in the literature, couple of metrics. One is called Model Climate Performance Index. Another one is Model Variability Index. What do they represent? The first one represents how good the model is in terms of climate, you know, climatology itself. You know, in general, is that a good model? The second one is, does it represent the interannual variability adequately? So the whole approach is to look at these two metrics and see which models have those, you know, the best performance with respect to those metrics. Now, these metrics, the lower the value, the better the model is for that region. So in other words, if the MCI value is below zero, MVI is below zero, they are better than all the others. So we, what we did was to plot the MVI versus MVI, MCI plot, and kind of zoom in to which models fall into that class where we have low MCI and low MVI. And I want to show you an example here. You see this example, we have all these models. The MCI is in the horizontal axis, MVI is in the vertical axis. So all the models that are falling in this lower left quadrant are the best model for that region. So that's how we subset or cull the models. Okay, these are the models going forward. We think what we call are the best models, and we will be using the results and the data for those models going forward. And in terms of model metrics, we looked at the maximum one-day precipitation amount. We have 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, and 10-day. Because we zoomed in on these highlighted metrics because we are looking at extreme rainfall. We could have used the others as well. We did, but we actually focused on this yellow highlighted because our focus is on extreme rainfall. So we thought we need to pick the models that are best performing with respect to these metrics. So that's how we did the model culling. To do the modeling methodology, I won't go through the details of that, but the idea is what is known as a peaks over threshold. In other words, we set a threshold for the rainfall and we pick all the peaks over that threshold for statistical analysis. And we did some heavy duty statistical modeling for it. And we looked at two future periods. So if you're planning a project from 2030 to 2069, what would be the change factor, or what we call near period? The other period we looked at, and this was stated in the scope of work, 2060 to 2069 far period. So we looked at both future periods, near and far, and then we looked at the duration from 1 day to 10 days. Now this is probably the last most complicated graphic, but this is an important graphic. So there are three curves in here. We all know the probability distributions. So we have the observed distribution from data, but the models, there are two types of distributions for the model. So the current same period has the observed data and then the future period. But because these models are not perfect, they cannot have the right parameters or data itself to mimic the observations. They are not going to match exactly the observed. So they have three curves. The idea is like, how do we use these three curves to come up with the change factor to adjust the observed value to the future condition? And this is the formula we use. So idea is by observed depth duration frequency value will be multiplied by some factor percentage, and I will show you what that factor look like. If that factor is less than one, that means the future rainfall will decrease. If that factor is greater than one, that means the future extreme rainfall is going to be higher, which is important to know. And how much is that factor? That's the question. So finally, we computer did all these computations and computed the change factors, but we had a lot of dimensions of this data. We had three climate data sets, we have several durations, we have two future periods, and we have five climate divisions and different return period. You would agree that there's a lot of dimensionality, and presenting this was a challenge. But I will show you some of the results and which are in the report itself. And this is a typical graphic we got. Vertically, you see that change factor. In other words, this is the factor to multiply the current depth duration frequency value with for future condition, in this case, near term, or 2030 to 2069. And horizontal axis, you have different frequencies, return periods. If you are designing for 100 year, you will look at the 100 year value here. And then there are three data sets. Like I said, we came up with the climate, three climate data sets. And then each of these panels represent the climate division. So the climate division one is Northwest Florida and going all the way south to the South Florida, climate division five. So there are some interesting patterns you can see. The one interesting aspect is that all are greater than one, pretty much for most durations, for most divisions. So that means that the future extreme rainfall for all duration and all frequencies, and we saw that for other duration as well, will be greater than one, means you have to multiply by, let's say, 10% or 20% of the current extreme rainfall to get the future extreme rainfall. So these are the median values of those change factors. The other interesting aspect you see here is that higher the return frequency, the higher the change factor. In other words, the 100-year rainfall will have a larger factor of adjustment than the 10-year rainfall. And that probably makes sense in the future condition. Another important aspect we saw is there is some general pattern going from north to south. And typically what we observe is that the climate division 5, South Florida, has lower values than other regions. So this is the final set of results. We provided the median values, but we also provided some confidence bands around these values. So if people want to use them, they can use them as well. And you can see these are for different durations as I will go through. And finally, there was a requirement that we had to come up with maps and a web posting. And I will give you a little bit of a, maybe, I don't know if I can demonstrate that here. But first, the maps. Let me show you the maps here. So these are the maps that we provided. These are like interpolated values of those change factor across the state for different duration, different frequency, and so forth. But the other website, and start this to show you. So this is an interesting project. You know, this is typically a project by itself. But we developed this through the use of some students or prospective students and developed this web interface to our results. And I believe this is going to be very useful, this kind of display So here we have different regions, future periods, near or far. I don't know if you can see very well, but sorry about the small font there. Different frequencies and different durations. And these plots are the median values and the lower and higher confidence bands for the median change factor for the three data sets.
Hey,
and
Obi, we're not seeing your map.
Okay. Let me see. How about now? No?
Oh, almost. It sort of flashed on for a sec.
Okay.
So if you're going to a different website.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Now can you see it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry because I'm using three screens here. That is part of the problem, right? So, but anyway, I think the idea is that we can click on any of these stations. Let's say you are doing a project near Lake City and you click on this point, this particular website will basically adjust this data to show the numbers that, the change factor that they should be using. And they provide the lower and upper confidence band as well. So this is our way of, it's a free website using Tableau. We didn't spend a lot of money to develop this, but in the future we might improve this. But this is kind of a first approach for us to communicate the results of this project. Let me see here. Finally, our basic recommendation is the rain load and the flood load should be using the current, the best available, which is, we think is Atlas 14 or from FDOT, and use this change factor that we recommend for as an adjustment before they are used for planning and design. And one final comment, I believe this is the first time this type of extreme rainfall adjustment have been done for the entire state. And I think many stakeholders might be interested in this type of data because people are beginning to develop resiliency plans, and particularly with the state bills that are coming, and rainfall besides sea level rise will be an important aspect for planning and design of future projects. So anyway, with that, I will stop here. Well, it took longer than you anticipated, but I appreciate the time I had to explain our project.
But is there any committee members that have any questions or comments they'd like to make?
Yeah, Vince here. I wanted to comment. In reading the entire report, I saw the recommendations for modifications to Chapter 16 and 11. Obviously for the map, but my concern relates more to roofing and the additional load that these projected rainfalls will put on the drainage systems and the actual load on the roof. I saw different regions have different intensities or amounts of water. What would be a good ballpark average to apply going forward? Not regionally, but like maybe statewide, we're looking at 2-3 inches in the near future. So that's something we could think about when we're putting up a building that's going to be around for the next 40-50 years, that roof's going to last.
Right. That's a good question, Vince. So from the data we have seen, typically that change factor is what you're talking about, I think. So they range from about 10% to more like 50%, but a good average might be more like statewide. Would be more like 20% adjustment. And it depends on the type of frequency you use. And typically the rain loads use 100 year. So for that, probably a 20% is a good number. And by the way, some other counties are also beginning to use that kind of figure. So if you want to average out, that would be a good figure to use.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments from committee members?
Yes, I had a question. This is John. Sure. In reading your report or parts of it, the external advisory panel seemed to have been involved in more on the front end. Did they have the opportunity to take a look at some of your conclusions, especially your change factors and their ability to take a look at it and provide any comments?
They have not. And I, after you, this meeting, I'm going to send them the comments. And one other thing, that many of those members are also in another panel that I help organize for the water management district. And our numbers are very similar to their, the change factors. And we are meeting this Friday with that group, and about half or more of this panel are also in that panel. So they will get a chance. But I intend to send them the report. I just didn't have time to organize a meeting with them because of their scheduling and our scheduling of trying to get the report out.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Other committee members, any questions or comments? All right. Is there any member of the public that wants to comment? All right, I'm going to come back to the committee then. Is there a motion, please, to accept the final report?
Chairman, so moved.
Schiffer will second.
We have a motion and second from Schnellman and Schiffer, respectively. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Yes, actually, there's a comment. I guess before, maybe, because this is technically a draft, is what I'm looking at the front cover. I don't know if it's possible for that review to occur by the external advisory panel, and then any recommendations they might have on the change factors might be applied, and or if they have no comments, then maybe they can proceed with the final. But that would just be a comment for consideration.
Mo, this is Mo Madani. I think really the way the project was structured is that for the external advisory group to provide their input in at the start of the project. I think really in terms of the progress and what's in the scope of work, there's nothing really in there that says that this research project has to be reviewed further by the advisory group. I think that the main thing at this point is to accept the draft. And then if there's any comments or changes, I think I would leave it to OB to really provide any agenda to it.
I think Mr. Madani is making a good point. You know, in our scope, our strategy was to, or in the scope of work, we assembled the advisory panel to get input on our methodology. And we did have that meeting, and they provided comments, and they are summarized in the report. There was no requirement for them to approve the results, but I will be happy to share the report with them. But I also left the report as a draft because I realized that maybe this committee had to approve it before I finalize it. And I think I agree with Mr. Madani if he can finalize the report, but I will send them a report, and if there are any comments, and I will provide any kind of revisions to Mr. Madani at a later date if necessary. I feel like these are this research, this type of research is moving or evolving. So we will, at FIU, probably will continue this kind of research. But I feel like this is a good start that should be made available to the public in general.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. John, is there any follow-up you want to make?
No, that's fair enough. Thank you.
Sure. All right. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you very much, Obi. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff, and everybody. I appreciate your support and help.
Right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. So before, is there any general public comment? Okay. And then you have the work plan, so Mo will get in touch with folks when you know, in advance of the next time we need to meet, when we start moving into next year's evaluation of next year's projects. Is there any other member has any comments or questions at this time? Seeing none, Commissioner Schock, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Doug.
Would you mind adjourning the meeting, please?
Sure, sure. Thank you, everyone, for attending. Appreciate all the hard work. Appreciate your time. If there's no further business, we can stand adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.